Hi, thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. We're discussing what happened in Dewan Rakyat today. So yesterday, on day one, de facto Law Minister Zakirin Hassan stunned Dewan Rakyat by claiming that the cabinet had decided to revoke all six emergency ordinances, and his refusal to clarify matters had cast a shadow on day two. What trends can we discern from the dynamics in the House, and what implications does it have for parliamentary democracy? Dr. Bridget Welsh joins us now. She's with the Asia Research Institute at the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. Bridget, good evening. Thank you for being on the show tonight. Now, Speaker Art Harun had repeatedly told the Dewan Rakyat this morning that the executive will only answer matters concerning the emergency on Monday, 2nd of August. And I'm just wondering, Bridget, what do you make of that? Why Monday? What's so special about Monday?
Well, my projection is that by Monday, that is likely that they will have King's approval of the ordinances, and we'll see if that happens tomorrow.
But Bridget, you know, without going through Parliament, is something, have we missed out on an opportunity to, in fact, interrogate those ordinances? I know many activists, progressive activists, are very concerned about the anti-fake news law, about the ability for, you know, the executive to dip into funds, consolidated funds, without parliamentary scrutiny. But there might be actually some really good things in some of these ordinances that could potentially be helpful in the next 6 months, assuming the emergency ends on the 1st of August. And I'm thinking of the law, you know, makes reference to housing and accommodation. What do you think has been missed in this very strategic maneuver to deny the federal opposition, one of the major planks coming into this session, which is the need to vote on ordinances?
Well, I think the sad thing is that the focus is not on the ordinance themselves or even the content of the ordinance. The focus is on the politics of the parliament. And in this context, there is a focus on trying to assure that there isn't a vote, that debates are actually curtailed to sort of very short statements and very limited in terms of who can participate in this process. And of course, the whole parliament as a whole has gotten tremendous scrutiny from the public. And so instead of focusing on specific issues about the ordinances or even some parameters of the discussions of COVID-19, although I'd say one thing about today was that there was more discussion of those issues compared to yesterday. And I think this is going to continue tomorrow. But my sense is that the discussion of the problems of the Malaysians has been overpowered by the politicking of Parliament. And there are really important things that I think need to be stressed. There's the issue of the way the Speaker is handling himself, the issues of the kind of noise and shouting and behavior of parliamentarians. Everyone is shouting at each other, the comment and the language at certain points of time. The issues of the fact that there aren't debates and the processes aren't necessarily followed in a consistent manner. These are issues that are really putting the parliament on trial and in some ways putting Malaysia's democracy on trial.
Right. And particularly as we've seen that there have been so many eyeballs on Parliament through all the different streams, there's been a lot more interest in this special parliamentary sitting than we've seen previously. I want to come back to something you said about the conduct of the Speaker. You talked about his role, and really Art Harun has been in the spotlight as in his role as a Speaker. And I'm just wondering about that role as an honest broker. Critics have pointed out that, standing orders have been used to subvert the parliamentary process. I'm just wondering whether you believe that he has been acting in a manner consistent with parliamentary democracy.
I think that, some of the procedures he's followed, and I think in many cases he has adopted positions that have not necessarily been seen as balanced and in the standard of a speaker in a democratic system where both sides are actually given opportunity to speak fairly, where the processes and the rules are allowed to continue. So I think it's unfair to say that he hasn't adopted some practices that are consistent, but I also think that there are legitimate legitimate reasons to question some of his behavior in the way that he's carried it out. And in this context, you know, what's the challenge is that Parliament shouldn't be about the Speaker. Parliament should be about the debate and the substance of what is being discussed. And what the focus is very much on the fact that the institution itself is actually being challenged and in some ways undermined by its management. And that is very troubling.
Can I ask you, Bridget, very quickly about that substance? Just a quick follow-up. You know, you talked about the substance of what was being discussed in Parliament, and I want to ask you about the conduct of the opposition so far. You know, Bersatu came out to say that the opposition has failed in presenting constructive criticism or, bringing up good ideas. Do you believe that, in your observation, have you seen the opposition use Parliament to their benefit?
Just for a moment there, when you both were talking past each other, I thought I was listening to Parliament again. But yes, I think that I do feel for that where there is a situation where some of the language has been used and a lot of shouting is going on. And this doesn't reflect well on anyone. And a lot of the opposition is coming from the opposition side, a lot of the noise. And I think that, you know, in some ways, many members of the House are very frustrated that they have not been able to voice out their concerns for 7 months when the Parliament has been closed. So there is frustrations. And we can see some of that in the speeches and some of the way that the behavior. But at the same juncture, you know, the calling of names and the use of language is really not, it does Malaysians a disservice and does the Parliament as an institution a disservice. And I think some people enjoy this. They enjoy the entertainment value of that. And there is a certain degree of frightening reality TV when you watch some of that. But the fact is that this is not what should be happening in a parliament, especially during a crisis where, there have been very important speeches that talking about the substance of parliament. I would say, first of all, the PM speech yesterday, which talked about the National Republic Plan. The challenge, however, is that the PM has been missing in action in terms of responding to the replies and actually participated very little today, less than an hour in terms of Parliament presence. But at the same juncture, the content of some of those issues are very important. And I think, for example, we also have seen very rich discussion about health issues, and in particular, the response by the former health minister, Dr. Zuhl, raised the numbers of issues about data, about issues about management of hospitals, relationships to doctors. And these issues are very much in the forefront of what is happening in terms of policymaking. So I do think that there have been these substantive elements.
Yeah, Bridget, I just want to reassure you that both Melissa and I are on the independent block on that.
So are you asking for a different position to move? Because there's a few people who want to move from different seats to another place as well.
So. Actually, that's exactly my question. So I know some really substantive debates, Mazli Malik bringing up the need to help private high-end education institutions and such. But I want to come back to the politics of Parliament, Guo Musang's decision to move, and ultimately UMNO's game in this parliamentary session. We know UMNO is fractured. What do you see happening on the UMNO side?
Well, we do see that maybe as many as 4 or 5 are definitely moving away from the positions of where they were sitting in this context. And that sort of indicates openly, if this movement actually takes form, that, you know, the government is a minority government. And of course, that in itself speaks volumes. So you don't necessarily need to see a vote when you see people actually move physically away in their support for the current government. And I think that is, but the fact is that UMNO remains a very divided party, and the numbers are still with the current government, in terms of the overall numbers of MPs within UMNO. But I think it is also fair to say that there are a small number that are moving to a more independent position. But I do think it's important to recognize that their movement is not necessarily a movement towards the opposition. The opposition remains quite fractured. And I think one of the things that's very clear in the Parliament discussion is that there are very different different types of voices. So while many different issues are being raised, it's clearly not one that is in a coordinated way. So you can see, for example, different positions over medicine. We had different positions and priorities of different sets of issues. And I think that the opposition is not unified as a group. And so they also, I would say, probably do not have the numbers.
Bridget, very quickly, the question of Sraa and Sabah and what's happening on the federal level, especially the perception that federal government is failing in many ways. Madhu Stangau, UPCO MP for Tauran, has come out to talk about the need to look at the possibility of decentralization. Do you think these themes might actually continue as the federal government is perceived to be weak, incoherent, and unable to really take control of the situation?
There's no question that decentralization is a very important issue, and I think as the COVID-19 situation escalates, which I think it will do for the next month at least, where the Delta variant continues to ravage across the country, the issues of state governments being able to manage their affairs and the fact that the central authorities cannot control and manage multiple sets of crises in multiple areas will push those issues to the ground in a more substantive way. I feel also that what is very important about beyond the issues of decentralization is the other discussion about parliamentary select committees and the need to have them. A lot of these discussions could have happened quietly and without this kind of fanfare. So there could have been open discussions about policies that would have been a dialogue. Right now, what we're in is too much of a shouting match at each other. And we clearly have a very defensive government and a very attacking different forms and streams from the opposition. But right. I want to move finally to the point about Sabah and Sarawak. There is no question we've also seen much stronger positions from these areas in Borneo. We've seen more unity among the GRS in Sabah and the coming together of different parties to express concern about how these areas in Malaysia are being treated and the resources. And I think Sabah has legitimate reasons to talk about these issues in terms of the vaccine disbursement and also the fact that they need different resources. And I think this is true equally so for other states in Malaysia and the peninsula as well. But in Sabah and Sarawak, they have a different status.
Right. Thank you so much. That was political analyst Bridget Welsh. That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. But before we leave you, a quick reminder that you can get all the latest information on COVID-19 vaccines at astroawani.com as well as the Astro Awani app. Thank you so much for watching. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Good night.